Hey there. I'm pleased to present a new sponsor for this summer, Gooder, a company that is all about creating fun, fashionable, and functional sunglasses that are actually affordable. Gooder makes quality shades more accessible, which helps make what we love to do in the outdoors easier for more people. So when I first heard about Gooder's no slip, no bounce, polarized, and super cute sunglasses that cost less than my post-hike dinner, I was all in. If you'd like to support She Explores and treat yourself to a pair of Gooders, head to Gooder.com and enter Explore15 at checkout for 15% off your entire order. That's G-O-O-D-R.com. And use code Explore15 at checkout to get 15% off your entire order. Look good. Adventure Gooder.
Yonder knows that the more time we spend in nature, the more likely we are to care for it. That's why Yonder wants to give people access to nature-rich experiences and escapes through their booking platform, and is working to set a new standard in travel that supports the health of the environment, the health of local communities, and the physical and mental health of guests. Consider booking your next getaway with one of Yonder's stewards who are committed to the ecosystems around their properties. Yonder is constantly adding new properties, so continue to check back as they add more stays to their growing collection. Get $100 off your first stay with the code SHEEXPLORES100 when you visit yonder.com. That's Yonder.com. Book an experience in nature and find your Yonder.
Hi, everyone. It's Gail. One quick ask before we jump in. For an upcoming episode on kindness that we find while we're out there, we're doing a call for voice submissions. So if you have a story of a time where you've been treated with kindness or offered it to someone else, or you have advice for how to create a kinder outdoor culture, head to the link in our show notes to submit. I'm so pleased to introduce part two of our two-part series on matrescence, hosted by my teammate Haley Hurst. If you didn't catch part one on pregnancy in the outdoors, you can find it in your podcast feed, and I highly recommend it. That said, while the two parts complement each other, they also stand alone. Enjoy.
I'm Haley Hurst, and you're listening to She Explores.
There's something about becoming a mother. It's such a primal, mammalian experience that I think we begin to see ourselves as nature. Like, it dismantles what eco-psychologists call the big lie, which is that we are separate from nature. And you realize that no matter how your birth or mothering journey has played out, it is a primal act. It is a natural act.
In our first episode on matrescence, we talked about continuing to carry a love for nature and time outside into pregnancy as we prepare for the major life change of becoming a parent. This episode continues into the next phase of the process, when the much-anticipated birth is over and we step into this new role and all that it entails, indoors and out. It's easy to simplify the postpartum period into an intense time of sleep deprivation, baby care, and hormones, because it is. The needs of an infant are simple but relentless, and the spectrum of postpartum depression and anxiety experiences are very real. But this time is so much more than that, too. From the tender early days of the fourth trimester to integrating the outdoors into your little one's lives as they grow, the postpartum phase of matrescence is a complex time of healing, caregiving, bonding, learning, and unlearning. It's a time that can simultaneously hold grief and ambivalence and profound joy all in the same hand. In this episode, we'll hear from Rukmini Hallowell and Rachel Barrett again, speaking about the early days with their children, Zen and Lola, who are now 21 months and 9 months old, respectively. And we'll also be joined by Jessie Harold, who you heard at the start of the episode. Jessie is a coach and a doula who supports women through various rites of passage, including that of matrescence.
My personal definition is that it's a 2 to 3 year identity shift that happens after a person has a baby. So it's not just a change to kind of the things you do or the things you feel or think. It's not just a behavioral shift. It's a shift to who you are. And often all of the sort of constellation, the ecosystem of your life shifts as well. So your relationships, your relationship with your body, the things you like to do, your career, it's a really kind of world rocking transformation. And that's kind of how I think of matrescence.
We'll explore the rite of passage that is the fourth trimester, or the first 3 months or so after birth, and a bit further into early parenthood, to examine how new parents experience and cope with this process of shifting identity, in part by way of their relationships with the natural world. Before we dive in, I also want to acknowledge that non-birthing parents experience many of the same aspects of early parenthood too, and, like pregnancy, each experience is unique to the individuals involved. Let's start with Jessie's quick definition of what the fourth trimester is.
The full trimester after you think all your trimesters are over. Generally, in our kind of cultural lexicon, it's referred mostly to the period of physical and emotional healing. And it's a really intense physical and emotional healing and integration that goes on after you've had a baby.
My daughter Cassidy is 16 months old now, but memories of her first few weeks still feel sharp, though somewhat softened. My baby was beautiful and demanding, and my body was the most sore it had ever been from a marathon labor and the new challenges of nursing. Simple things felt profound, bonding was powerful, and sometimes it was all intensely boring. I cried a lot out of frustration and exhaustion. I wrote back then that my world had shrunk down to basic needs in quiet rooms. Mostly, there was so much to learn, and the learning curve was steep. In some ways, those early months were like how I always feel during the first few miles of a backpacking trip, still adjusting to the heavy weight of a pack, not having gotten into a steady hiking rhythm yet. The distance you've yet to go feels impossible with slow, weighted uphill steps. But then, gradually, you find a rhythm. You take breaks and rehydrate, and the pack doesn't feel so heavy after a while. I asked Rooke what those early days were like for her.
Rough is the word that comes to my mind, and not because of the sleepless nights and all that comes with, you know, having a newborn. I think that was expected. It was rough because I felt like I put so much pressure on myself. I was very conscious of that, you know, loss of identity, because I experienced that during my pregnancy. I experienced that loss of autonomy, but then I saw it again on all the mommy blogs where, like, suddenly, you know, your Instagram bio changed and, you know, you're sharing mommy memes and all these things that kind of felt like it was very much a community, but to me, it felt like I was losing who I was and kind of replacing that, like, you know, changing your clothes. Like, I was taking my shirt off and putting on this mom shirt now. And I felt like I kind of had, like, FOMO for my past life. Mm. During that time, rather than create a new identity, perhaps melding the two, I had one foot in each world, desperate to fit into one or the other and not really fitting into either, right? I couldn't go do the things that I used to do because I had an infant, and whether I liked it or not, that changed things. And I wanted to be that mom that stayed at home and fawned over her child. And yet, you know, I felt torn to be pulled into this other world. So it was a trying time. That is the best way I can describe it. I think it would definitely be different if I choose to do it the second time around. I think I have a lot more confidence in myself to just, like, lean in.
A foot in both worlds. Jessie says that viewing matrescence as a rite of passage gives us room to acknowledge the space of betweenness. I'll let her explain.
So the liminal space is the time in between when, in this context, you're no longer not a mother, but you're not yet fully embodied in your motherhood. There's this in-between space where you're figuring out who you're becoming. And in our culture, we tend to really, we make that wrong. Like, we're always supposed to know where we're going and have goals and be kind of striving in the direction of something. For those of us who are traversing rites of passage and major life transformations, it's necessary to have a time of unbecoming before you get to become. And it's normal. So we have this idea in our culture that to say that you've lost yourself in motherhood is like the worst thing that could possibly happen. And when we use a rites of passage lens and we normalize the idea of liminal space, in fact, we understand that feeling like you've lost yourself or feeling disoriented is very much a part of it. And we normalize that sort of in between, that fallow time, that winter season of our lives before we kind of fully, I'll say complete that transformation, although I think it continues on through our motherhood and all of the different ways that motherhood changes us and motherhood changes itself over the years. But I think that's what rites of passage lens offers us in exploring matrescence.
It's so powerful in itself to acknowledge this in-between. And Jesse mentioned that one way to cope with how difficult it can feel to be in this transition space is to embrace the slowness of it, rather than trying to forge ahead. One thing worth mentioning when it comes to giving space and slowing down is that the mothers I interviewed had the option to take up to an 18-month maternity leave in Canada, so they had more supported time to experience this life shift than people elsewhere may have access to. Regardless, the time warp that is the big slowdown of early parenthood can be a struggle for anyone. Embracing this fallow, slow time and just being is difficult, especially against the backdrop of a modern dominant culture that prioritizes productivity. Rachel made a point of practicing being intentionally slow in those early days.
It's a pretty special time, really. I felt it to be a space that is kind of rare that we're able to slow down that much. So even though it was very chaotic, I could recognize at some moments like, okay, this is really special and I'm very overwhelmed right now, but you know, here I am.
It does feel like that time stretches
very
thin. The days and nights are long, but it is kind of a bubble too, where you, I don't know, maybe have that acknowledgement of like, this is so fleeting. These days are so tender, but also so brief. Mm-hmm. And it's hard. If you're struggling, it's hard to look beyond it and enjoy it. But it's nice that you did have moments of presence and appreciation too.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what your body felt like?
I think in the beginning I described it as like a deflated balloon. it just felt like this vacuum.
The physical and emotional experiences of the fourth trimester are separate but deeply connected. While a body is physically healing, oxytocin and cortisol, the bonding and stress hormones, are working to rewire the brain, priming parents to be good caregivers. But this flood of hormones and new things to think about, combined with fatigue and recovery, can come with a lot of anxiety. Here's Rachel on keeping her daughter safe outside of her body.
It was very jarring for me. Suddenly I felt that here is this small, tiny, precious being, and the world is so crazy. But now she's outside of me, and she felt safer when she was part of me.
Now, Rachel describes what her first experiences of movement and time on the water felt like in her postpartum body.
Through our journey, we all have these experiences that maybe an injury or something that we've gone through that we've had to readapt and almost relearn our bodies. Pregnancy felt like that on like the biggest scale imaginable. And so going back into surfing, or you know, the initial moments of kind of getting back onto my yoga mat postpartum felt so raw. It's like my body had so much to say, and I just needed to show up and listen. And so it was a very gentle practice and remained that way for some time. And surfing took me a while to get back into the water because I didn't want to rush that. But when I did get back into the water, it felt incredible, very emotional, met with other women in the water in the community. One woman who's an amazing surfer and who I witnessed in her pregnancy surfing and was really an inspiration to me in that regard. So it's being reminded too that, you know, we know our bodies and we know when we're ready to kind of step back into a different rhythm of things again. So that was really nice to be able to have those initial moments be shared in some ways with other people who've had similar experiences.
So I would like to know what your physical recovery was like. Birth is hard on your body no matter how you do it. But I think one of the unexpected things is how long and physical the recovery can feel. Can you talk about what it was like for you?
Yeah. So I had a C-section. It was unplanned. It was, I guess, what the medical profession likes to call a quote-unquote emergency C-section. I didn't really have a birth plan. I'm a bit of a go-with-the-flow kind of person. I just knew I wanted it, like, maybe with a doctor and at a hospital. That's, like, my criteria. So my recovery was very much a physical recovery. I obviously had massive surgery, and my son ended up in the NICU pretty much immediately after birth. I got to hold him for a little bit, and then they took him into the NICU. So I think there, for me, my recovery actually ended up being a little bit quicker perhaps than the average C-section, because as soon as I took that catheter out, I was up and walking to the NICU, which for whatever reason, the Brampton Hospital has the maternity ward on one end of the hospital and the NICU on the other. Terrible planning. Don't know who thought of that. So I was up and walking 2 to 3 times a day the length of the hospital. So I actually recovered very quickly. Painfully, but quickly.
Yeah. You had to hike across hospital. It probably helped you hike on real trails faster.
Yeah. Well, I did my first hike 4 weeks postpartum.
I saw that on your Instagram. Yeah. I can't believe he was so little.
So I also can't believe I did that. Like, in hindsight, and it's not because I was like, wow, what an amazing feat. But like, why would I do that? Again, I was like trying to prove to myself that I was, you know, back up and normal and I could do anything and I could do everything that anyone else could do. And I, in fairness, I picked a very easy trail. But 4 weeks post massive surgery is still a ridiculous thing to do. And if I were to ever do it again, and if I ever had to get another C-section, I would not do that because it was miserable. I was like, it was not a good time. I don't know who I was hiking for because I did it alone. So,
but you did it.
I did do it. Yeah, that's true. I did do it. And I moaned about it for like 3 days later.
We'll hear more from Rook, Rachel, and Jesse after the break.
However you're embracing movement this summer, it's important to feel your body along the way, which is where Organifi comes in. Organifi creates delicious superfood blends that help your body find the balance it needs while you're out there. Just add a scoop to a glass of water to energize and nourish your day with carefully picked adaptogens, fruits, vegetables, medicinal mushrooms, and more. Say you're out for a day hike, 3/4 of the way up the mountain, and your legs feel so heavy. Organifi Red Juice provides a caffeine-free energy boost made from freeze-dried berries, beets, adaptogenic mushrooms, and more. Plus, it comes in handy travel packs as well as a bulk container, so it's easy to take on the go. Learn more and get 20% off your order by heading to Organifi.com/explore and using the code EXPLORE at checkout. That's Organifi.com/explore, code EXPLORE for 20% off. You probably know Danner for their durable and comfortable boots that can take you just about anywhere. Recently, Danner has been asking, what makes us go there? It might mean defying all odds by following a passion for rock climbing, despite the need for a custom prosthetic arm, and encouraging people along the way to push through obstacles. Danner ambassador, kindergarten teacher, and adaptive climber Kimber Cross is fueled by a desire to help kids overcome perceived limitations. On weekends, as well as those generous school vacations, Kimber is off to the Alpine, where she leads mixed ice, climb mountains, canyoneers, and pulls granite with one arm and one impressive prosthetic. Wherever you're headed, you can find the shoes to help you go there from Danner's most iconic women's styles. And learn more about Ambassador Kimber Cross by visiting danner.com. That's danner.com.
We're back.
I wish I could give a new mom the feeling that I feel today. I wish I could go back and give that to myself 18 months ago, but it's not how it works.
The crux of this process of becoming is that you have to live through it to get beyond the fourth trimester. As we ease back into the outdoors, going for short walks is one of the very first things doctors recommend for gentle movement. And sometimes when the baby's needs are all met, but they're still crying, going outside is the answer for them too. Before we dive into more stories of postpartum surfing and hiking, here's Jesse, speaking about what time in nature can offer us as we live through this transition.
It's not just about being outside, but actually there's something kind of deeper here where when we're attuned to the seasons, for example, we see that it's normal to have fallow, dormant times, to have darker seasons, to have resting seasons, and that it's normal and that indeed, you know, spring comes, and so does summer. And I think there's tremendous support for people going through major transitions like matrescence in, you know, not just getting outside, which is extremely beneficial in healing, but also using that as a reference point for your own, the seasons of your own life.
It's not always easy carving out space to have those experiences, especially alone. For Rachel, pumping milk so that she could leave her daughter Lola and go surfing again was one of the most challenging things. But having support from her community helped her get back out there.
Do you remember how many weeks it was before you really felt like you had kind of figured it out and felt like you could do more things again than just feed and meet the needs of yourself and your child? And that was it.
Oof. How long am I even now? The journey continues. It was interesting. So I love that idea of that it takes a village, because for me, stepping into some of these elements of motherhood that I didn't expect to be so challenging has required another woman in my life almost like forcing me into it and kind of shaking me up and shaking loose that story or that resistance that I have around it. Just being like, listen, you're going to do this. It's fine. It's not a big deal. You know, kind of normalizing the struggle. And so I think my daughter was about 8 weeks and I was home for a visit in New Brunswick and I was struggling with pumping and wanting to slowly start to think about maybe surfing again, but I was so emotional about pumping, I just really couldn't do it. And so a friend of mine just was like, got the pump out, and I had it all sterilized and ready and all that. So she really pushed me in a way that I needed to be pushed, because it was so, you know, it was easier for me in some ways to say, oh, it's okay, I'll just, you know, I just won't surf and forget the hassle. And it's, you know, it's what if my baby only wants the bottle and doesn't want a nurse? That was something I was nervous about for some reason. Even with all of those outside opinions that we've kind of talked on a few times, there have been a lot of very positive outside opinions that have been really helpful for some of the experiences that mothering and postpartum brings forward that maybe I definitely didn't expect, and maybe some people don't either.
Yeah, it can feel so hard if you don't, you're only looking out your own eyes, mm-hmm. right? Like something can feel impossible and another person's like, you know what? Like, it's not that hard. You can do this and it's going to be fine. And here's what I did. And it's all good.
Yeah,
really nice reality.
Yeah, such a good reality check, and necessary, because it can feel so overwhelming. And then you're overtired and your body's tired and just trying to carve out any bit of space for yourself that you can, but challenged in the process.
Using hiking as a reference point for how the seasons have changed since their days in the NICU, this is what Rook had to say about gaining confidence as a mother.
I would say recently our hikes have changed because he's toddling around now, so he's investigating everything, sometimes at like painfully slow snail paces. But, you know, those moments are, it's crazy to see, or at least for me, it's crazy to think back of like that little baby hooked up to those monitors and that anxiety and stress that I would feel at like those weigh-ins, to be like, oh my God, did he gain weight? Did he eat enough food that like maybe we'll be out of the NICU? Like all those racing anxiety thoughts. And then to like, you know, snap out of it and see this little toddler investigating a hollowed out log for 35 minutes. It's just, it kind of brings me to this place of like secureness, I guess is the kind of word I'm looking for. Like I feel so much more secure as a mother and as an adult woman. I feel like I know how to handle certain situations. I've gotten so many hikes under my belt now, not only solo, but with an infant. I feel like I'm very, not only am I prepared, but I feel like emotionally prepared for pretty much any situation that could happen my way. I know what to do in an emergency situation. And, you know, all of these feelings will just sort of like culminate in this idea of like watching this toddler like explore his surroundings, and to think of how far he came, I feel like those are really grounding moments for me to remind myself why I dragged him literally screaming down the trail as a newborn, and why I pushed through all that anxiety, and why I hiked with 35 pounds on my back, because, you know, I had all this stuff with me, and it was all for like this moment to like see him be happy outside.
As you heard, Rook carried a lot of stress and worry in the early days of Zen's life. Here, she'll describe a turning point for her anxiety on the trail.
One memory I have of us hiking together that sort of had that coming to moment was we were hiking this trail up about 2 hours, 2.5 hours north of Toronto. So not too far, but, you know, far enough out with the infant. Zen was probably, I think it was 5 months, and it started raining. And at first it was just like a little, like, you know, pitter patter. We had our raincoats, wasn't a big deal. And then it started like pouring rain. And I had, of course, all my contingencies. So I had our like pack cover. I had an umbrella. I had an extra umbrella in case that umbrella broke. And of course, both umbrellas broke, because why wouldn't they? And we're getting wet. Now I'm starting to worry. Like, I'm getting worried that Zen's going to be getting wet and this and that. We managed to fix one of our umbrellas. And I'm having like an anxiety episode here. This was, you know, my danger moment that was happening. And I looked down at him. He was in the Ergo baby carrier. And he's just hysterically laughing because he had never seen rain. And it was just like such a sweet moment where like I realized that like in the back of my head, I was thinking of worst case scenario, even though like he was dry, I was dry. We had a working umbrella now. And like my son was just laughing because he was excited. And he was like, you could see him like sticking his little hands out under the umbrella and laughing when the water was touching him. And it was just one of those moments where you're like, oh, okay, I'm at like a 10 and I should probably be at like a 2.
I love that. It's everything that you're carrying that's stressing you out probably doesn't matter. And yeah, the wonder of them experiencing something for the first time is an amazing reality check to get you back into the present moment.
Yeah, like I was like ready to turn around, and I was, you know, kind of, we were barking orders at each other about like turning around and get this and where are the car keys, and like, and we both just sort of stopped and we like started laughing. I actually have a video, I think, of him somewhere, of him just like cackling. Like he was just having such a good time and it was so sweet. And, you know, we both started laughing because, of course, like we were like, oh, we're panicking and no one, you know, we don't need to do that. New parent life, I guess.
Yeah. And thank you, small human, for keeping us here.
You know, it's funny. Children teach us like so many lessons, especially when it comes to like slowing down and appreciating the smaller things. But like as we get older, we're constantly in this like rat race of like the next thing. And, you know, all of the stuff that we consume just sort of perpetuates that. Social media and TikTok and, you know, all these things are all like bite-sized information things. And then you're on to the next. And when you have a toddler, things are sometimes, I mean, sometimes painfully slow, but things just get so slowed down. I like will watch Zen sometimes investigate like our bookshelf, and he'll like pull out one book and he'll like peel the pages, and then he like, you can see his little like brain ticking, and he's like, do they all have these pages? Like, should I pull them all out? And like, you know, it just sort of takes a moment to stop and be like, oh yeah, like there's new things in the world for him to explore. And like, the reason why I don't have the patience is because for me, I'm like, who wants to investigate this? We've already seen it. But for him, it's all brand new. And so I feel like he's always teaching me to slow down a little bit, which sounds really cheesy and corny. So you can maybe edit that out.
I think it's a good reminder too.
You can keep it.
I really feel that it brings an awe of all things perhaps that I took for granted before. And I really appreciate the starry night and the moonrise and the sunset and the rhythms in nature and when the fireflies come and all these little things and the little magic about our area and living here. But it's so special to see her and to watch her grow and follow the birds in the yard. And we have a lot of deer that'll walk kind of through our property. And it's so sweet to see her react and become more conscious of the world around her and the trees and everything coming to life in spring. And I guess the timing of her journey, of her growth, and you know, how she's really at a point in her development of kind of fully coming to life in so many ways too, and her personality starting to kind of shine out. And yeah, it's just a really beautiful time, and it gives me so much gratitude to be able to spend that time outside and to share that with her, and all the times that we'll be able to share in the future.
From your perspective with 6 months of parenthood under your belt, how do you feel different now? I guess that's a huge question, but like as far as like your identity or how things have shifted, do you feel kind of like a different person in some ways?
I definitely do. The how around it is pretty interesting to think about. I feel that all of the change and uncertainty of pregnancy and expectations of society and our own belief systems and all of that sends you through this journey to knowing your truth more intimately. And for me, I really felt that it was kind of a polishing in some ways of having to call in my energy, noticing things that fueled me and things that drained me felt a lot clearer through pregnancy, where our senses are kind of heightened in some ways. And it feels like we're a lot more sensitive to things. I tried to take that sensitivity as a positive thing, and when I, you know, had that clarity to do so, to really kind of notice those qualities about myself that becoming a mother allowed me to step more fully into. I like the idea of like our mother nature, our ability to kind of be present and love unconditionally, kind of fully embody the potential of that moment. Looking back on the journey, of course, I feel that there were moments that I was very emotional or very nauseous and kind of swept up in the whirlwind of that feeling, that physical sensation at that time. But overall, it's been so beautiful to see how it has transformed me, and I think in some ways how we kind of see ourselves new in the eyes of our children and all that it's brought forward or polished in me along the way.
We may never feel perfectly polished in the messiness of life, but I love Rachel's metaphor because it acknowledges that becoming a parent is a smoothing of a self that still exists. We are not completely eclipsed by parenthood. And while it is natural to worry about what might be lost in the process of any big change, I appreciate Rook's perspective on integration.
What example do you hope that you are setting for him and for other women and parents about what we give up or don't when we become parents, and what hopes do you have for him in the future?
Yeah. You have this new person in your life, and that doesn't mean that there needs to be a complete upheaval. It means that you can very easily integrate this new person in your life, just like how you've integrated any other person that comes into your life. You don't do a 180 on yourself just because, you know, you have a new partner, or, you know, you meet a new friend or anything like that. And obviously I know, like, you're responsible for someone's life, so it's not really the same thing, but, you know, it's not that hard to integrate a child into your life, and it doesn't need to be the other way around. If you baby and me stroller time at the museum is not for you, it doesn't have to be for you. There's no rules with parenting. I mean, other than like the obvious ones of like, don't hurt your children and like keep them on time. But like outside of that, there's no rules to parenting. For my son, honestly, DEI on trail. I want to see more people of color. I live in what is arguably not only Canada's, but probably the world's most diverse city. And I have never seen another person of color on any of the trails we go on. And my hope is that my son, I do a lot of like talking and, you know, even my social media and all that about DEI. My hope is that my son never has to talk about that. I don't want that to be a thing that he needs to talk about because it's just normal. There's nothing to talk about because it doesn't exist, because, you know, you see all of these cool role models who are of color, of different ethnicities, of different ages, of different abilities that are all in outdoor adventure sports. And I just want that to be, I want that to be the world he lives in. I don't want him to have to talk to people about what it feels like to be the only brown person walking down the Bruce.
Is there anything that you have planned that you're excited to get to do with him or experience with him for his first time?
Yeah, well, hopefully, you know, COVID permitting, we'll be doing our first backpacking trip, an overnight, thinking about a 3-day portage in Algonquin National Park, Provincial Park, sorry. I hope that pans out. We are very law-abiding when it comes to COVID restrictions, so we don't want to break any rules. That, and I'm going to buy him his baby's first skateboard. So we're going to get him into skateboarding as soon as possible. I think he's going to start around 3.5, assuming he can fit into all of his protective gear appropriately. I was a big longboarder growing up. So yeah, I just want to get him ready for snowboard season, you know?
Yeah. Cool. Very cool. Do you have anything specifically that you're looking forward to doing with her in the future?
I'd love to try and camp with her this summer. I haven't researched too much about camping with a baby, but I'm certain that it is possible and that there are women doing it right now. So I'm looking forward to that and to having some beach days as a family. And my partner and I are getting pretty good at kind of sharing our surf time back and forth, changing shifts, so to speak, and to just be on the beach with our baby. And there's lots of other babies in the community, and having some distanced outdoor hangouts as the weather gets a little bit warmer feels super exciting right now.
Yeah, it does.
As for me, I'll be taking my daughter to wade in the cold mountain lakes that I grew up swimming in, and also trying to have patience when all she wants to do is sit down on the trail and inspect rocks and handfuls of dirt. Getting to have these conversations about matrescence has given space for appreciating the possibilities within it, to feel more deeply our place as mammals in nature, embedded in life cycles, and the precious fleeting nature of it all. We'll close with Rachel's thoughts on moving through these seasons.
I like to think of it as change. And, you know, like in nature, everything is kind of changing and in flux and adapting. We could think about it as things that we have to give up, or it can be, in some ways, we have to adapt in a different way. We have to change how we move through the day. My day has to have a lot more strategy and planning, as I'm sure yours does too. We can kind of move through that and ask for help when we need it and carve out those practices and rituals for ourselves that keep us going, but find a way to kind of ideally move through those changes and those different chapters and seasons of our lives and our journeys without having to feel like we need to give up parts of ourselves or pieces of ourselves along the way, but that we're continuously changing or continuously polishing.
Thank you so much to Rukmini Hallowell, Rachel Barrett, and Jesse Harold for taking the time to talk. I'll link all of their Instagram handles in the show notes and via the episode landing page at she-explorers.com. Thanks to our sponsors Yonder, Danner, Organifi, and Gooder. You can find She Explores on social media, our website, and wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find me on Instagram at Haley Hurst. If you enjoy listening, there are a few different ways you can support us. You can subscribe, leave a review, or share with a friend. And if you'd like to connect, join us in the She Explores podcast Facebook group. Music in this episode is licensed through MusicBed. This episode was hosted by me, Haley Hurst, with editing and production support from Gail Straub. She Explores is a production of Ravel Media, released on Wednesdays. We'll be off for the next 2 weeks and back on July 21st. Until then, stay curious.